Thank you all for joining. We are continuing our discussion, our exploration of living Emunah. Now, last week in our first discussion, our first conversation, we focused on the idea that Emunah is an awareness, a feeling, a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. It's an ongoing presence. It's not something which is cognitive. It is an awareness. It's a feeling. It's a yediyah, as we pointed out. So how do we cultivate? How do we nurture? How do we grow our Emunah? Because if Emunah is an awareness, we can have a heightened sense of awareness. We can nurture it. It's something that we can aspire to and develop. And this is something that we need to work on. The Chazon Ish points this out in Emunah Bitachon. Just like we cultivate other aspects of our personality, of our spiritual personality, we need to cultivate our Emunah. So how do we do this? Well, we find the concept of Emunah was reflected at Yam Suf, Vayaminu Ba'Hashem Uvamosha Avdo. When are the Jewish people described as having had Emunah? It was at Kriyas Yam Suf. And Chazal tell us that that makes a lot of sense because Masherosa Shivcho Alayam, what every Jewish person, even the most pedestrian person, even the Shivcha, saw what Yechezkel ben Buzi, what the great prophet Yechezkel wasn't able to see. We all had the presence, the feeling of being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is Emunah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was right there. And it's described in Oz Yashir from the perspective of Ze Keli Van Veyu. And Chazal, when they see the word Ze, this, you have to use a finger, right? If you're sitting in front of your screen right now, you could point with a finger, Ze, this, Ze Hashem Kivino, Ze Keli, this is my God. And then, Elokei Avi, the God of my fathers, my father, Va'aroma Menhu, and I will raise him up. There are two pathways, two categories, two avenues to nurturing Emunah, to Ze, to being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is Keli, one is my personal development of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, and the other one is Elokei Avi, the God of my fathers, my parents, my teachers of generations. And so this week, and Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, next week, we're going to talk about these two pathways to Emunah, the Elokei Avi, which is going to be today, and then Zekeli. As the pasuk says, Da es Elokei Avicha v'avdeyu. We have to get to know ourselves, the Elokei Avicha, the Emunah, the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that comes from our parents, from our teachers. So next week we'll talk about Da of Zekeli. Today we're going to talk about Elokei Avi, Elokei Avicha. So perhaps we can think about three ways that our parents and teachers in previous generations help us develop Emunah and cultivate our awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first begins with a mashal that appears in a beautiful sefer. It's an English sefer called Wellsprings of Faith. It's a translation of some of the Emunah Sitecha teachings of Rav Moshe Wolfson, where we wonder, we can, you ever go to the zoo or you go out on a nature walk? Rav Wolfson says, look at the beaver dam. Did anyone ever educate that little beaverla as to how to build a dam? Sometimes you go on a walk. We have this right nearby, right near near our home here in Skokie. There's a beautiful university called Northwestern University where they have a path, people, pedestrian people. So my wife and I, on occasion, will walk along the water on Long Lake Michigan. And imagine Lake Michigan is to your right. It's in Maim She'ein L'Masof, an expanse. And on the left side is the university buildings. And under the overhang of the building, they look like these little circular pods. These little, almost like mounds of dirt with perfectly shaped holes going into them in the underside of the roof and the overhang of the building. And all of a sudden, if you look, you'll notice birds flying in and out. And there's a whole slew of these little mud birds' nests, perfectly shaped conical birds' nests that are in the underside of the building. Did those birds who are building those incredibly complex mud structures on the bottom of the overhang, did they go to Northwestern School of Engineering to figure out how to build a bird's nest? The beavers didn't go to graduate school. The birds didn't go to trade school. It's something, it is a yidea, it is an awareness that they have from their instinct. And that instinct is hereditary. Birds have this inborn ability, this inborn knowledge of how to build a bird's nest from the moment they are created, from the moment they come into this world. And the same thing about the beavers, and the same thing about so many creatures. One aspect of emunah is that we receive it hereditarily. It becomes part of our identity through just being born with a sense of emunah from our parents. We yarshin, we inherit it instinctively. It's an instinctual part of our being. It's not just because each one of us has a spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is of course a source of emunah. Deep down, each of us, if we define ourselves, which is a longer conversation not for today, we define ourselves by our internal spark, by our neshama, by our soul, by our chelak eloka, which of course is the source of emunah. But we receive emunah, we receive the gift of emunah as well from our parents. It's this yerusha that we receive. Okay, for those who are watching, I'm joined by a guest, Mr. Ami Brand, who just popped into the shir. How are you? You good?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to hop upstairs for a minute? Because I'm just in the middle of teaching Torah. Don't worry, do you want to stay nicely? Up to you. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So can you just close the door, please, on your way out? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Who was that?
That was my son, Ami Brand, 4 years old, just crashing our shiur. This is part of the doing video shiurim from your home office. Anyway, the emunah that we have, which is bequeathed to us from our parents, it's part of our instinct. There is an instinctual quality of emunah, which somebody writes here in the chat, what if you don't have emunah? So two things. One is that everyone has an internal spark of emunah, and it's possible to ignore it. It's possible to diminish it. It's not possible to destroy it, but it's possible to have so much noise that it's difficult to hear. It's a kol d'mamadaka, which we're going to talk about, please God, at some point in the future a little bit. But today we're focusing on the fact that our parents actually give us the gift of emunah in our genes through just being born into it. So how does that happen? Well, Avram Avinu, who is the forefather of our nation, so that means actually from a DNA standpoint, genetically, and for those who are converts, it means spiritually, Avraham Av Hamon Goyim, all of us are the spiritual, and for those of us born in, we are the genetic descendants of Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu had, as part of his spiritual, emotional identity of DNA, the concept of emunah. Avram was the Rosh HaMa'aminim, the founder of emunah as we understand it. Avram Avinu, as Chazal described to us, searched the world and understood and perceived and saw the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was that ma'amin, that, so to speak, believer. It means he had that consciousness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with Avram having that quality, that became part of his identity, and he bequeathed that. The same way that a bird has an innate, instinctual understanding of certain aspects of the world to be able to navigate them, Avram Avinu introduced to all of us this internal instinctual ability to have emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you're wondering how that's possible, if Avram Avinu wasn't born with it, so the Kuzari talks about, on one level, Avram Avinu was born with it, all of us are born with it, but there's a really fascinating piece of research, of science, which I think can enhance our appreciation of this idea that Avram's emunah is bequeathed to us. Because there's something in science called epigenetics. And if you look in the NIH, on their website, they explain what epigenetics is. It's what they call modifications of DNA. These modifications of DNA don't change the DNA do not change the DNA sequence, but they can affect gene activity. They regulate their activity. Chemical compounds that affect, the word epi means above. So it's the above genetics. It's the things that we do, actions that we take that can affect our genes. In some cases, according to the NIH, in some cases, these epigenetic modifications remain and be inherited through the generations. A person takes an action, develops their personality, nurtures a certain identity. That identity, it doesn't necessarily change the actual sequence of the DNA, but it changes that the way that the DNA guides us and the way that we interact with ourselves and our cells through action. Your decisions, our decisions in life of how we act, what we do, actually affect our DNA and then can be passed along. So Avram Avinu, Vahemin Bashem, he's told you're going to have children. What does Avram say? Vahemin Bashem. Avram says, I believe. I have emuna. I'm aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayach Shevel Lod Staka. So Mepharshim discuss what exactly that phrase means. Avram Avinu had emuna, and it was considered to be Staka for him. Vahemin Bashem Vayach Shevel Lod Staka. But perhaps the key understanding for us is that the Besura of Banim, the promise that Avram Avinu is going to have children, that's right together with Avram Avinu's emuna. Being told he's going to have children is Vahem in Bashem. Avram has emuna. That is exactly what's going to be bequeathed to all of us. We, the genetic descendants of Avram Avinu, have emuna because he bequeathed it to us. Because through his search to find the Ribono Shel Olam and then share that with the world, he ingrained the awareness, the emuna in Hashem so much into his personality that it became embedded and part of his DNA, his genetic makeup. It modified the chemical compounds that all of us, the descendants of Avram Avinu, Elokei Avi, we are the descendants, Magen Avram, we say every day in Shemoneh Esrei, we are the children of Avram, that means we have emuna. That's number one. Where is this expressed? Very often, this is expressed, someone pointed out in the chat a little bit ago, it's expressed in ways that are on some level similar to the dam of the beaver or the bird's nest of the bird. Does the beaver decide one day to build a dam, or just instinctually that beaver is drawn to it? There are many times in life that Jews in various places in their journey are surprised, are just drawn instinctually and instinctively to their emuna. We're approaching Tisha B'Av. One of the things that we're thinking about now are the challenges, the struggles that Jews have had, and of course, the Holocaust chief among them. One of the great privileges that I've had here as part of our Kollel in Chicago is the opportunity to work together with some amazing educators at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. So yesterday, we had a book club. We studied the Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust by the great Yaffa Eliach, Aleha HaShalom. How many tales in that work are about Jews who otherwise were not practicing Jews? You wouldn't call them observant or orthodox or religious. But when it came time to face a test, all of a sudden, there was a what we would call a pintel yid. There was an awareness of the Ribono Shel Olam, awareness of their Yiddishkeit, awareness of their emuna that just came out, perhaps you could say came out of nowhere. But it came out from the deepest recesses of their being, because part of the DNA of a Jew is emuna. And there's an amazing story, which we don't have time to talk about at length today, of a man by the name of Shunia Weiss, who was observed by the Heilige Bluje of a Rebbe, Zichron Levracha. This Shunia Weiss was anti-religious, was known to be somebody who not only was not religious, but was an antagonist of religious people. This Schneeweis was faced just, and was known in the camp in Janowska for not being religious. He was faced with a question. The Nazis rolled in a cart of food on Yom Kippur. And he looked the officer in the eye. He looked at German. He says, Jews don't eat on Yom Kippur. What do you mean Jews don't eat on Yom Kippur? This man has eaten at every Yom Kippur his entire life. But not this moment. And Hashem Yikom Domo, the Nazi, shoots him on the spot. He dies in a pool of blood on the floor. The Blujever sees this. Where did that come from? It came from the Pintle Yid, from that emuna, which is deep, deep rooted within us in our DNA that we have received from our parents, grandparents, all the way back to Avraham Avinu. That's number one. Where can we find Elokei Avi, emuna from our parents? Number one, we don't have to work for it. It's just bequeathed to us. Number two is that it gives us, having Elokei Avi, another way to develop emuna through what we can call Masorah, tradition. The Halakha Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, makes an argument about emuna. In this context, it's about the Torah. And this becomes known traditionally, although it appears earlier, it's known as the Kuzari's proof, so to speak, quote-unquote proof. There are no such thing as actual proofs of God, of emuna, but it's a pathway to developing emuna. And the Kuzari, he says, you know, the Jewish religion is unique. It's not the same as other religions. Because the Jewish religion had mass revelation. Could you imagine, he says, that 600,000 people, which is just the men, so almost 3 million people, standing in a mountain, all receiving the same revelation, and then telling that story for future generations? It's not the same as one man saying, I live in upstate New York, I had a vision, or one man with a small group of disciples. Everyone was there at mass revelation. How are you going to convince hundreds of thousands and millions of people of an event that was claimed to have taken place in front of all those people and never happened? That's a very Tamsis Hadibur of the Kuzari's argument. So we can now expand on that and say, wait a second. If we understand the Ribbono Shalom Bedavka deliberately gave the Torah and revealed himself to us in Yetzias Mitzrayim, in the Makos, and then culminating with a face-to-face experience that was so overwhelming that Parcha Nishmas, our neshamas, just leaped out of our bodies to reach and reconnect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that idea is a very profound catalyst for emuna. But how do we get there? We get there through the tradition, that there is a Masorah that we have from this mass revelation on down through the generations. There's an interesting website. It's called simpletoremember.com. And I didn't go through the whole thing, but they have an interesting chart there, which I modified a little bit for myself, for our family. I'm going to share it with you on the screen, where we don't have to go far to understand, and I hope you can see it in front of you. If you could see on the screen, the beginning of this tradition, Moshe Rabbeinu Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Rambam in the beginning of Mishnah Torah gives us the chain of 40 figures, all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu till down, till Ravina and Ravashi. You see here where the cursor is. Well, now we know after that, there are periods of the Savoroim, the Gaonim, the Rishonim. We can trace these Chachamim, these Chachmei HaMesorah, all the way down. This is from, you see, passing through the Gaonim, middle column, to this, you see where the cursor is on the bottom here? Rav Gershon Maor Hagola, the Rabbeinu Gershom, major figure. This is a tradition that's going to work for the Ashkenazi tradition. We can create the same one for the Sephardic tradition. Rabbeinu Gershom, the Riben Yakar, then Rashi, top on the right side, Balei Tosfos, Chachmei Ashkenaz, German Chachamim going to Poland. Here's the Rama on the right side, Rav Mogen Avram, student to teacher, unbroken chain, Gaon of Vilna, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, Rav Itzel Volozhiner, Reb Yosef Tov Halevi Soloveitchik, that was the Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik, and then, in terms of our contemporary Kolo, Rav Shechter Shlita, Rav Schwartz Shlita and Rav Lichtenstein Zecher Tzadik Levracha, three of my Rabbeim, this idea of Masorah reinforces our emuna. The idea that we feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that that is a truth is reinforced by the idea that we have an unbroken chain. Someone asks you, how do you know that God exists? You know that on Kiddush Friday night, we don't say, I am Hashem, Ani Hashem, who created the world. Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, Shebarasi Shemayim Va'aretz. No, no one was there. Who was there when God created the world? We say, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, Shehotzeicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. That's where we all met God, when we left Egypt, which culminated in Maimon Har Sinai. And that story is the cornerstone of developing emunah. And that's why, for a different time, that's why on the night of the Seder, emunah is the theme, matzah is the nama de mamnusa, and that's why Masorah is so important. And that's why so many mitzvahs that we have are zeichel yitzias Mitzrayim. This second approach comes from our parents and our teachers. We look to them as the next chain connecting us back to that revelation at Sinai, to that experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we develop emunah thanks to our parents because, number one, we inherit that spiritual DNA of emunah from our parents that comes back from Avram Avinu, the Pintel Yid. Number two, we have emunah because we know it to be true just by tracing it through the generations, parent to teacher, to rabbi, to generation, all the way back to Maimon Har Sinai and Tzias Mitzrayim. And then there's a third approach. Now this approach you can find in this volume. The truth is you can get it online. This is a volume called The Jewish Action Reader, although you can get these essays, you can find them on the website of the Orthodox Union in the archives of their articles. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, was an incredible person. He was a Gaon Adir, a Torah giant, but he was also a man of tremendous spiritual strength. He was a giant in the world of emunah. I had the privilege to be a student of Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, when I was learning in the Grus Kollel, and he had such a tremendous impact on me, not because I understood most of what he said in the shiurim. It was so above my understanding. But watch Rav Lichtenstein daven Mariv on a Wednesday night. It was incredible. Rav Lichtenstein taught me what it meant to live with emunah, to feel the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to live with the presence. The emunah was alive for him. It was palpable. It was real. The way Dam Shemona Esrei was really talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was living emunah, and emunah was alive for him. So he wrote an article in the Jewish Action years ago called The Source of Faith is Faith Itself. We're going to come back to this article again next week in Mirtz Hashem when we talk about Zekeli. But one aspect of this article that we're going to focus on, and this article has been analyzed in two subsequent articles by Rabbi Dr. Aaron Siegel and Rabbi Shalom Carmi in a tradition volume dedicated to Rav Lichtenstein's thought, published a couple of years ago. Rav Lichtenstein talks about what's the source of faith. So he gives several avenues to developing emunah. And one is, he says, in my case at least, the critical factor is indeed who rather than what. He says, without question, during my formative years and to a lesser extent beyond, the source and bulwark of my commitment was not so much a cluster of abstract factors or arguments as key persons. Rav Lichtenstein says, it wasn't a cogent argument that reinforced and strengthened and created his emunah, his belief. It was rather a group of people. It was his rabbeim, his parents, his teachers. He says, my parents, Zecher Tzadikim Levracha, who were also my primary rabbeim, and my teachers, Rav Hutner, the Rav, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, they stand out high above the rest. And then he talks about the role of each one of them. But what does he say? It's not so much that they taught him the arguments about believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. about why they should be committed. He points out, he says that the source of my support was not confined to me and my immediate rabbeim. At one point during my late teens, I was troubled by certain ethical questions concerning Amalek, Erani Dachas. I then recalled having recently read that Rav Chaim Brisker would awaken nightly to see if someone hadn't placed a foundling in his doorsteps. I knew that I slept quite soundly, and I concluded that if such a paragon of chesed coped with these halachos, evidently the source of my anxiety did not lie in my greater sensitivity, but in my weaker faith, and I set myself to enhancing it. Says Rav Lichtenstein, I look at my rabbeim and I see giants. I look at the giants of previous generations and I see angels. I see people whose intellectual and moral character is so far beyond what we can even grasp. And those people were ma'aminim, so I hold on to them. I hold on to their emuna. My emuna is reinforced by knowing that they had emuna. It's a chain of emuna of role models. So for those who look back in their own family history, to people who had emuna in unbelievably challenging circumstances, or people who had emuna who were brilliant and accomplished and remarkable, those are sources of faith itself, not within ourselves, but in previous generations, in the Masorah, not so much in the fact that the Masorah provides a link to Har Sinai and our experience of Hashem, but because the Balei HaMasorah, the people of our Masorah, are the living embodiment of Emunah. And maybe when we feel weak in our own Emunah, as Rav Lichtenstein describes, we look at these giants, these paragons of virtue, of everything which is good and beautiful, and we know to be noble and right and godly and brilliant. And we say, if we have a question, Rav Lichtenstein said, and this is a man who was Harvard educated, who was one of the most incisive, thoughtful, analytical people. But at the end of the day, where did he get emuna from when he couldn't get answers to his questions? Because so many times we don't have answers to our questions. It's Esa Enai al Heharim. We look at the mountains, not Heharim, the mountains, but the Horim, the parents, grandparents, previous generations, teachers, mentors, and finding Jewish heroes. If we don't know them, we should learn about them. We should read their stories, whether they're people in the 20th century or in the 3rd century or in the 10th century. It's important for us to have people to look up to be our sources of emuna as role models, as people to connect to. So to summarize, 3 approaches of Elokei Avi. One is we receive our emuna through our parents just by inheriting it. It's a hereditary development of emuna. The second one is that we have a Masorah we receive from our parents and our teachers, the tradition that bolsters our emuna, going back to the ultimate experience of emuna of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. And thirdly, through those parents, grandparents, role models, we reinforce our emuna, as Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, because they model for us what it means to have emuna, and we look up to them and draw our source of inspiration from them. I thank you all for listening. Welcome you back, please God, next week as we talk about Zekeli, how we nurture our own personal emuna. I hope you stay well, stay healthy. I bless all of us with a good and safe week. Everyone be well. Thank you.